speaker now is Dr. Andrew Beck. And Dr. Beck is an assistant professor of pediatrics at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center. And his research aim is to improve child health outcomes by focusing on the identification and mitigation of key social and environmental determinants of health. Specifically, he has focused on quantitative and quality improvement studies that have focused on population-level health disparities and academic community collaboration. Dr. Beck works clinically as a primary care and hospitalist pediatrician.
Thanks, everybody, for coming so early on this New Orleans morning. So thanks again for the opportunity to present here, and we have no disclosures today. So I'd like to start with some brief background that hopefully will color the rest of our conversation. So as many of you probably know, asthma is the most common chronic condition of childhood, and it leads to considerable morbidity. Morbidity is preventable, however, with the appropriate and correct medications. Despite this, disparities exist. Children of minority race, high poverty, and diminished access tend to have more symptoms and diminished quality of life. Asthma, the disease, is marked by airway inflammation and constriction when poorly controlled. Control is possible, however, through effective and affordable medications, controller medications, that are available for broad use. These medicines are taken daily, and they're designed to prevent symptoms and attacks, and to ideally limit the need for rescue medications. Fortunately, these controller medications have relatively few side effects. On the other hand, rescue medications are incredibly important medications that are taken during symptoms or during attacks. They temporarily improve symptoms, yet they have slightly more side effects than controller medicines. Our goal as pediatricians is often to limit the need for these rescue medications through the use of controllers. Still, controller medication prescribing and adherence varies considerably, and we believe this may be a driver of the expression of morbidity. The asthma medication ratio, or AMR, is currently used by physicians and managed care organizations to gauge quality of care delivered to persistent asthmatics, those patients who, by definition, should be taking a daily controller medicine. The AMR is calculated by dividing all fills of controller medications by all controller plus rescue fills over the course of a one-year period. This yields a number between 0 and 1. Higher numbers are better, with lower values indicating more rescue than controller fills. A value less than 0.5 at the patient level has been shown to be associated with increased asthma symptoms and exacerbations. So I'd like to provide you with two examples just to hammer the point home of what this AMR is. So let's start with patient X. In 1 year, he fills his controller medication. Some of you may know this as albuterol 12 times. I'm sorry, as Flovent, and his rescue medication, or albuterol 3 times. The AMR would be calculated by taking 12 and dividing it by 12 plus 3, or 15, and this would yield a ratio of 0.8. This is very good. On the other hand, let's take patient Y. He fills his controller medicine 3 times and his rescue medication 12 times during the course of the year. His AMR is calculated by taking 3 and dividing it by 3 plus 12, or 15, yielding a ratio of 0.2. This is not very good, and based on previous data, we know that this patient would be at excess risk of having an asthma attack. Now, pharmacies are well positioned for an active role in population and patient-level healthcare. They're located on the ground, often within neighborhoods characterized by high morbidity, high-risk populations. They're frontline providers that are embedded within the community, and they could influence prescription and adherence rates among those at highest risk for inadequate symptom control. We also see pharmacies as potential sources of useful data on medication fills and fill patterns, data that's not always available to physicians, though it could be highly relevant to clinical decision-making. Really to identifying which patients may be filling their rescue medications all the time and the controller medication inadequately. So this, in this study, we devised two objectives. First, we sought to evaluate whether the asthma medication ratio, or AMR, could be calculated at the pharmacy level and not just at the patient level. And then we sought to assess whether this pharmacy level AMR would be associated with community or neighborhood level childhood asthma morbidity. So we designed a study using two distinct data sets. Our predictor variable was computed from a data set furnished by a single retail chain of in-county pharmacies. This data set was used to calculate pharmacy-level, pharmacy-specific asthma medication ratios. Our outcome variable was computed from a separate, distinct data set of hospital-based asthma utilizations or visits, specifically asthma-related emergency department visits and hospital admissions. So let me start with the pharmacy data set. This data included information on all asthma-related medications that were filled at this specific pharmacy chain for children aged 0 to 18 years between January 2010 and January 2012. Specifically, fills occurred at one of 27 in-county retail stores that had an estimated 45% of the county's pharmacy market share. Each filled medication was categorized as either a controller medication or as a rescue medication according to established convention. The hospital data set included information on all asthma-related emergency visits and hospital admissions that occurred at our institution, Cincinnati Children's, between January 10 and January 2012. Children were included if they were aged 1 to 16 years, and children living outside of our county were excluded. We considered this to be a population sample, as the vast majority of in-county emergency visits and hospital admissions occur at our facilities. Our predictor, the pharmacy-level asthma medication ratio, or PH-AMR, was calculated much the same way as the AMR, except here we calculated for each of the 27 included pharmacies. So in other words, we divided all the controller medications that were filled at a particular pharmacy by the number of controller plus rescue medications filled during the same study period. Once calculated, we analyzed the PH-AMR in a variety of ways. First, we looked at it as a binary variable split at 0.5, as this has been shown to be the optimal patient-level cut point. We then looked at it in quintiles, placing approximately 20% of the pharmacies into one of five groups, and then we looked at it as a continuous variable. Our primary outcome measure was the census tract or neighborhood hospital visit rate. This was calculated by dividing all utilization events, once again that's emergency department visits or hospital admissions, by the number of children living within a particular census tract. Hospital visit rates were calculated for each of the 27 census tracts where included pharmacies were located. Census tracts, as many of you might know, are geographic areas defined by local municipalities and the U.S. Census to be relatively homogeneous demographically and to correspond to standard neighborhood boundaries. Here, we saw census tracts as serving as a conservative estimate of each individual pharmacy's market share. The resulting hospital visit rate outcome was treated as a continuous variable. Covariates included variables available from the 2008 to 2012 U.S. Census American Community Survey. We included variables thought to be relevant to accessing medications. Thus, we included the census tract poverty rate, defined as the percentage of individuals living at less than the federal poverty line. And we also included transportation access, defined as the percentage of households without access to a car. We then assessed the relationship between our PHAMR predictor and the census tract hospital utilization rate outcome. When the PHAMR was binary, we used the Wilcoxon rank sum test. When we used quintiles, we used the Kruskal-Wallis test. And finally, the continuous PHAMR was analyzed using multivariable linear regression. So let's turn to results. First, a total of 583 unique children contributed 950 asthma-related hospital visits during the study period. This table illustrates those patients' demographics. You can see that the median age was 5.4 years. A slight majority of children were male, African American, and publicly insured. Roughly 5% of children included in this study were Hispanic. It should be noted that each of these patients resided within one of the 27 census tracts that had one of the included pharmacies. Now, between 2010 and 2012, the study period, the included pharmacies dispensed nearly 21,000 controller medications and 19,000 rescue medications. The median PHAMR that we calculated was 0.54, with a range of 0.38 to 0.66. This figure provides the PHAMR for all of the 27 included pharmacies. Of note, 12 pharmacies had a pH-AMR value that was less than 0.5 and are depicted here in red. The store with the lowest pH-AMR was located in the urban core of Cincinnati in neighborhood A, while the store with the highest pH-AMR was located in the suburban neighborhood B. During the same time period, the median hospital visit rate across the 27 included census tracts was 20 visits per 1,000 children per year, with a range of 1 to 49 per 1,000. This figure provides a visual depiction of the considerable variation in hospital visit rates across the included tracts. And for reference, you can see that neighborhood A, again with the lowest or most suboptimal pH-AMR, had a visit rate of 40, 8 times that of neighborhood B's visit rate of 5 per 1,000. This map represents all of Hamilton County, Ohio, divided by census tract. You see each tract colored according to its asthma-related hospital visit rate. Light yellow tracts have relatively low rates, whereas dark red tracts have high rates. The overlying circles represent each of the 27 included pharmacies, with the size of the circle being representative of that pharmacy's pH-AMR. Here, small circles represent lower or more suboptimal values, while the larger circles represent higher or better values. This circle is the pharmacy in neighborhood A, again with the lowest pH-AMR. I wanted to provide a characterization of this neighborhood, so I did an unscientific yet I think insightful image search. And here you can see the pictures that came up when I did so. And you can see police action, mugshots, buildings in distress, really all factors representative of the elevated rates of poverty often seen in this neighborhood. On the other end of the spectrum, this circle represents neighborhood B, the highest pH-AMR. Here, the same type of image search highlights the township council, new property builds, and township parks. Just looking at the map as a whole, you can see that in general, the smaller circles tend to reside in tracts more likely to be orange and red. It's not surprising, therefore, to see that the poverty rate in low pH-AMR tracts was more than double that in the high pH-AMR tracts. That the percentage of households without a car was significantly higher in the lower pH-AMR tracts, and that the hospital utilization or visit rate was significantly higher, 3 times higher in lower pH-AMR tracts compared to higher pH-AMR tracts. Similar patterns exist when we looked at the pH-AMR split into quintiles. Indeed, graded dose response and linear relationships were apparent between pH-AMR and poverty, car access, and hospital utilization. You can see that the relationships between pH-AMR and both poverty and hospital utilization were found to be statistically significant. And it's noted that the quintile with the lowest pH-AMR had a hospital utilization rate that was 5 times that of the quintile with the highest pH-AMR. That is, the hospital utilization rate in the pharmacies with the lower asthma medication ratios was nearly 38 per 1,000 children per year, compared to just 7 for those pharmacies with the highest ratios. In an unadjusted linear regression model, pH-AMR was found to account for 51% of hospital utilization rate variation. After adjustment for census tract poverty and car access, the R-squared value here increased to 0.68. And moreover, we were able to see that for every 0.1 point increase in the pH-AMR value, the visit rate decreased by roughly 9 events per 1,000 children per year. Next, we plotted all controller and rescue medications filled over the study period. This chart depicts such fills at pharmacies in so-called healthy census tracts, the half of census tracts with fewer emergency and hospital visits. The y-axis here represents the absolute number of fills, and the x-axis is time measured in weeks, with the darker lines representing 4-week rolling averages. The green or top line here represents controller fills, while the red or bottom line represents rescue fills. Of course, you can see significant seasonal variation, but what I'd really like to highlight is that at nearly every point in time, the controller line in this figure is above the rescue line. Now, this stands in contrast to the pattern seen at pharmacies in the sicker half of census tracts, those with more emergency and hospital visits. Here, the red line, the top line, represents rescue fills, while the green or bottom line represents controller fills. Again, you see the seasonal variation, but here, again, I'd like to highlight that in this figure, the rescue line is higher at nearly every point in time than the controller line. So to summarize, We found that pharmacies located in high hospital-utilizing census tracts or neighborhoods have low pH-AMR values, indicative of the fact that they dispense more rescue than controller medicines at nearly every point over time. Indeed, we found a significant and independent association between this pharmacy characteristic and childhood asthma morbidity, even after adjustment for underlying poverty and car access. For included tracts, which contained a total of nearly 30,000 children, we calculated that a 0.1 point increase in the pH-AMR value would prevent approximately 240, or more than half of all, annual hospital visits, assuming a causal relationship. One could extrapolate further to the nearly 170 or 180,000 living within our county, and of course that number would rise. Now, of course, this study is not without limitation. So first, hospital utilization data was obtained from our single hospital system, so less to follow up is possible. That being said, we know that our institution captures the vast majority of such utilizations for asthma, so we do not expect this to have substantially altered our results. Secondly, pharmacy data was obtained from a single chain, which of course may impact generalizability. Still, this chain has an estimated 45% of the county market share, and stores were located throughout the geographic area. Third, we were not able to know the true market area for each individual pharmacy. That being said, we felt that census tracts were chosen as a conservative estimate of that market. Fourth, the two data sets we used are distinct and, of course, may or may not contain the same patients. Thus, for that and other reasons, we're not able to show causation. With these limitations in mind, we plan to test the pH-AMR more deeply against patient-level asthma control, medication adherence, and pharmacy access. And ultimately, we plan to use it to guide interventions such as pharmacy-based medication counseling or medication delivery. To conclude, we feel that such analyses could prompt cross-disciplinary collaboration that have the potential to promote new testable interventions aimed at reducing both asthma morbidity as well as disparities in asthma morbidity. We see pharmacies as a possible population health leverage point and a strong collaborator in assessing and improving asthma control within a community. So I'd like to just take a moment to acknowledge my collaborators, my funders, and my family. And there they are. I'm a pediatrician, so I'm allowed to do this. Anybody's allowed to. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions or comments you may have. Yeah, so we've seen previously that census variable is associated with utilization within our community. We also felt that it was potentially related to one's access to pharmacies, which was the main reason why we decided to include it in the model, thinking that it could potentially confound whatever relationship we saw. In this particular example, the car access variable did not remain significant when we included it in the model with the other variables. That being said, I still think it was an important contributor, and like I said before, we've seen it as a significant predictor in other models.
Could it have to do with urban need? Like some of your pockets were in urban areas?
Yeah, so great question. I mean, the reality is the city of Cincinnati, unlike a lot of major metropolitan areas, still has a fairly car-centric community. We do have public transport that is okay, but I would say that the vast majority of people still benefit from having cars, even if they don't necessarily need one. So the common story that I'll often cite and will often teach our residents is that if you're within one of those downtown neighborhoods, but you're on kind of one side of the city and you need to come to our clinic, sometimes you need to take a bus downtown, transfer, take another bus up, and it's a two-hour trip to go just a handful of miles. So we do have public transport, which may impact some of the transportation access or transportation availability in the downtown area. For better or for worse, I think, probably for worse, I think we're still fairly car-centric. Yes, sir?
Thank you.
Yeah. I think so, too. Yeah.
Thank you.
Rochester, New York. It's a wonder. I grew up there. It's a wonderful city. Yeah, so I think on the face of it, I totally agree. It was kind of a back of the envelope calculation, right? We know asthma is inherently multifactorial, as are so many of the chronic diseases we all treat, whether we're pediatricians or internists or public health workers. So I think the reality is that it's so multifactorial that the reason why controllers are being underfilled is probably multifactorial as well. Perhaps it's access to pharmacy. Perhaps it's a differential understanding of the need for those medicines. Or as you suggest, and I think as I believe, it may be competing priorities that, I'm much more concerned about my roof caving in than getting a controller medicine, whose benefit may be somewhat abstract. So I totally agree with you. I think the approach I would take would kind of be multifactorial as well. So I think this is in the context of trying to think about all those other social determinants as well. I'm trying to remove some of those competing priorities or at least mitigate them. But then at the same time, perhaps those are the children that would benefit from controller medications the most. Now, would it truly reduce 243 events? I can't tell you. I think it bears further study. But I think if we were able to figure out how to get the right kids the right medicine while also, fixing or moving on some of these other factors, I think we're more likely to see that result. I know, just as an example, we've seen, so at Cincinnati, we've done a lot of work with respect to meds in hand at discharge. So in other words, those kids who are admitted for an asthma attack, every one of those kids now, or about 95%, goes home with their, rescue medicine with albuterol. But if the inpatient team, sometimes in concert with the outpatient team, has decided that they would benefit from Flovent or Qvar, one of these controller medicines, they go home with at least a 30-day supply. And we think that that's one of the drivers of us seeing a 20% drop in readmissions over the course of the same period. So it might very well be, we know it is, that these same kids are dealing with an adverse, home environment and, exposure to diesel-related pollutants on our, interstate spurs that they live along. But perhaps these are the kids that need those medicines the most. So long-winded answer, but the summary is I totally agree with you, but I think trying to figure out how to get the right kid the right medicine is critical. Yes, so I think it's great. So one of the things, I didn't present any of this data here, in part because we haven't done anything that sophisticated in terms of analysis, but in our primary care clinic, which is the center for a lot of the highest risk kids in our community, the tip of the iceberg of those patients get asthma care coordination, and a key component of asthma care coordination is med delivery. Now, the challenge we've had thus far is signing pharmacies on to enable us to perform that service. So we have few community pharmacies who are doing that now. I think if we could advance the argument that it is beneficial and important and potentially cost-effective, we may be able to sign more on. I think something like that would be a great alternative. Mm-hmm. Yes. So it's a great question. So I've relied a lot on the American Community Survey, which is, you know, for those of you who are not aware, not familiar with it, if you're old enough to remember the year 2000 and 1990 and 1980, some of you may have been lucky enough to get the long form of the U.S. Census, and some of you may have been really lucky and got the short form. The long form has a lot of the questions and the data that the kind of covariates I presented here. But starting in 2010, there's no longer a long form, so the American Community Survey, in essence, is taking over for that. And it's done on a sampled basis annually, and then the census aggregates it so as to get at smaller geography. And so the covariates I used were from the 2008 to 2012 American Community Survey. Now, there are limitations with that, right? So some of that data is old. Some of that data it's all sampled, and so there are error bars around these estimates. The reality in Cincinnati, and I don't know what community you live in, I think this is true in a lot of parts of the country, but not every part in the country, is that some of our local kind of demographers have presented us with some data to suggest that, you know, in a city like Cincinnati, there is not a whole lot of change over time with respect to a lot of these variables, which I think has helped us advance the argument that it's okay for us. You know, there are limitations, clearly, but that particular limitation is of less concern. And so I think it's the other thing I will say is that you in some ways have to take the good with the bad, and you know, the perfect in some ways is the enemy of the good or close to perfect. And I think the reality is we have very few data sources that provide us with some of these measures. And I think even if there are some limitations around the use of the U.S. Census data or perhaps other local survey data, I think it's still better than nothing. Yeah, unfortunately, in this study, we weren't. So you grasp at another limitation of this. So filling of medicine is not adherence to a medicine. It's very difficult to measure that. The data sources we had were not able to do that. We have and are increasingly starting to look at, adherence to visits, value of primary care, those kinds of things. But from this data set, we weren't. The other thing that I will mention is that we're just starting a study as well that, again, won't get directly at your question. It'll in some ways begin to look, in broad strokes answer some of what you were discussing. We want to do almost like a space-time analysis of where kids are going when they're using their medicine in the week or two following prescription for a medicine. So what does it actually look like? What are the challenges to going? And these aren't going to be admitted kids. These are kids we see in primary care. So what are the challenges, barriers to getting from point A to point B? How is the school involved? You know, how are multiple houses involved? All those kinds of factors. So you're saying like almost like off tangent. So like, are there any really high performing? Yeah, so we haven't gone that deep, at least with these data yet. One of the things we're trying to do actively is almost like phenotyping neighborhoods. So, in other words, if we look at a particular neighborhood, what are the kind of risks and assets that that neighborhood possesses? And of course, it's ecological. Not every individual patient in that neighborhood might possess all of those risks, but how could we think of it as kind of an initial screening tool? So with this, we haven't quite done that, but those are things that we're working on. We're looking at things like, you know, access to medication, access to primary care, but we're also looking at housing. We're looking at exposure to violent crime. We're looking at other potential resources within the community, like, you know, mental health access points, schools, something like this, those kinds of things. Yes.
To move on, so if you can talk with Andrew when he's
I'll hang out because I've
done.